This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. At the time of recording, we still don't know if the latest negotiations between Ukraine and Russia will bear fruit, or whether Putin will ever honor his pledge to ease bombing, or for how long. What is clear is that his invasion hasn't gone the way he expected.
It's not just that the Russians don't have gas or other means to fight, but it's the actions of the Ukrainian army that led to destroying their lines of communication, so they can't replenish their food, fuel, and other equipment, said Serhiy Kanyaziev, the city's police and military advisor.
Ukraine is pressing its counterattack on several fronts, claiming new victories on the battlefield. Government officials here say Ukrainian forces have retaken several villages around Kharkiv in the east. That's a city that's held out against Russian assaults.
And in another major development tonight, a senior U.S. defense official now says Russian forces that had taken control of the city of Kherson are no longer in full control of that city.
These Russian setbacks have led some commentators to begin throwing around words like win and lose. But the distinction between those terms is getting blurrier by the minute.
If he wins, he loses, and if he loses, he loses.
CNN's Chris Wallace.
And he's a pariah. How does he go back to meeting with world leaders? How does Russia, as long as he's in power, go back to having an economy? So what's his endgame?
In a recent issue of foreignaffairs.com, Gideon Rose wrote, "A shocking aspect of the Ukraine war, everybody agrees, is how stupid it is. What kind of idiot invades a country without a plan for how it all ends? This lesson might be the cringiest of all for Washington to learn, however, because entering wars without plans for ending them is an American national pastime."
Everybody convinces themselves that it'll be different this time. Hey, we took over Vietnam from the French. We literally stepped into the French shoes and told ourselves, it's okay, we'll do better because we have pure motives and they're just bad colonialists.
Gideon served on the National Security Council under Clinton and is a fellow in U.S. foreign policy at the Council on Foreign Relations.
We may believe that this is about democracy or about rights or about authoritarianism. In most of these conflicts, what motivates most of the players is, are you part of my group or are you part of the enemy group? And we have been the white colonial foreigner in most of these conflicts, and now Russia is. Essentially, these are colonial wars at their most basic level. And if you get in a colonial war, the people who are trying to resist colonialism are more motivated because for them it's an existential choice, whereas for you, it's an optional choice.
Okay, so let's talk about the end game.
We tend to think of wars, it's like a boxing match in which the problem is to beat up the other person and get him to say, uncle, or just knock them out. But unlike a boxing match, the real problems with wars start when the fighting stops, which is you have to have a stable political solution afterwards. But because we don't tend to think about the politics of wars, we're always surprised by the challenges in governing a country when it starts to fall apart. And then you have Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld saying, hey, stuff happens, as if you couldn't plan for that stuff. You can. So the Russians are being excoriated for not having a plan for what to do if their war didn't go successfully. And that's exactly what has been the characteristic of American national security policy for half a century. In Vietnam, we thought basically if we keep bombing and pounding the enemy, then eventually they must give in because they're a weak, poor country. They never did. And so we were stuck having escalated to a huge level, having to withdraw and back out. In the Iraq war, they convinced themselves that a few Iraqi exiles led by Ahmed Shalabi would be able to run the country greeted like liberators and provide a sort of puppet government that we could walk away from. That was a fantasy. And that was when Petraeus, stuck dealing with the aftermath, makes his famous comment to Rick Atkinson, "Tell me how this ends." And in Afghanistan, we also didn't have a great plan. It was to put in a new government and hope that we could essentially pacify the country. And that might work for a little while. And 2 decades later, we run away, just like we did in Vietnam and Iraq.
So Russia should have learned from us, but they didn't. Do you think we can still learn from our past mistakes sufficiently to help get Russia out of Ukraine?
The main lesson of these cases for what we do in Ukraine now is to realize that we're on the opposite side from what we usually are doing. Usually the United States is the strong, dominant alpha power. We're the conqueror. We're driving things. In this case, Russia is in the Washington role. That has two big implications. First, for our own strategy, we're trying to get the Russians to voluntarily walk away like we did. So we need to basically confront them with a hurting stalemate or a defeat on the ground and use whatever tactics hurt us. Lots of IEDs, knocking off collaborators in the areas, making it impossible for Russia to achieve its goals.
But Gideon, we're not there. I mean, we're not putting IEDs in the road.
We are Pakistan when the United States is in Afghanistan. We are Iran when the United States is in Iraq. We are providing help across the border to the locals. We are the Ho Chi Minh Trail supplying weapons to the people inside Vietnam fighting the great power. And so we need to think like the people who beat us in those wars. Because Russia and Putin right now is in a situation pretty similar to where the United States leadership was in Vietnam from the late 1960s and where we were in Iraq and Afghanistan from the mid-aughts, which is now Putin realizes the mistakes he's made. Now he realizes that he's paying a huge price. And you could already see him start to backtrack. But it's very difficult psychologically to go through the Kubler-Ross 5 stages of grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. We're trying to get Putin to recognize in weeks what it took us decades to accept. And humiliating him is actually probably a bad way of doing that. We actually want to give him something of an exit route so that he can be like Nixon and Kissinger, thinking of having maybe a decent interval or a way out. He's concerned this time about his loss of credibility. All these things we felt ourselves, and it's why we stayed in Vietnam so long. It's why we stayed in Iraq and Afghanistan so long, because we feared the consequences of leaving. We want to make leaving as attractive as possible so he'll choose that option rather than continuing to pound Ukraine.
You mentioned psychology, and you've observed that in 1972, Nixon and Kissinger bombed the hell out of North Vietnam shortly before pulling out, a big macho display that we could spin to seem like a victory.
The United States negotiated an exit from Vietnam in the fall of 73. But when we publicized it, our client in South Vietnam said, wait a second, I don't want this settlement because I'm ultimately going to fall because of it. When he made his objections public, Nixon and Kissinger came up with the idea of the Christmas bombing in late 1972, early 1973, to make it seem like we were bombing the North to get them to concede even more and create a better settlement, when in fact it was essentially covering up that we were forcing Tew to sign the settlement we wanted. And here, this is the kind of case in which everyone talks about how Putin controls the Russian information environment and he suppressed the press. It's awful for a variety of reasons, but it's actually pretty good for war termination, because the more Russia and Putin can control the domestic narrative of whatever happens, it almost doesn't matter whether they have a real victory as long as they can sell it to their own public that way. That means Putin can declare something and get it believed.
Is there any way that the U.S. can thread that needle with Zelensky and Putin and appearing like victory in Ukraine and in Russia? And I mean, I just don't know how you come up with a story like that.
So the way you do it is by not rubbing their nose in it. The way the United States can help is by not doing things like what Biden did at the end of his speech in his ad lib the other day.
We'll never be a victory for Russia, for free people refused to live in a world of hopelessness and darkness. We will have a different future, a brighter future, rooted in democracy and principle, hope and light, of decency and dignity, of freedom and possibilities. For God's sake, this man cannot remain power.
What you want to do now is allow the Russians to slink away quietly and climb down from where they are. And the more you get carried away and make this a giant anti-Russian crusade, the more it makes it harder for him to back down. Think of human psychology on a basic level. You, me, anybody. If we know we have to do something, then nagging and yelling at us to do it makes us more reluctant, not more willing to do it. And so by getting out of the way and lowering the temperature, even as you fight the war, you make it easier for Putin to accept what he ultimately has to accept. We want them to do what we did in Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan, which is walk away with their tails between their legs.
Right. But he's going to have to come up with the story.
This is the thing we have to understand. So what we want to do is basically say, not he's an evil authoritarian who's psychotic and has to be assassinated. Let's just say he's a leader who got into a bad situation and is now trying to reverse course and preserve what he has left at home.
We're not going to publicly say that stuff.
No, you don't say that stuff. But if you think that way, it'll affect what else you say. If you think that way, you will try to smooth the way out rather than make it harder for him to climb down.
Talk about lessons learned and outdated narratives ripe for burial. What can we learn? Rather, what will we learn from Russia reenacting some of our most tragic mistakes? Is it clearer when someone else is acting as stupid as we have?
Hypocrisy is nearly universal in human psychology and in international relations as well. We are seeing all the downsides of the attacking, conquering power in a colonial war in Ukraine, and we're reacting viscerally against it. When we were in the position of the Russians trying to conquer other countries that didn't want to be conquered, we convinced ourselves that those downsides either didn't exist or were justified by the ends, or weren't even happening because we couldn't do something like that. And this should lead us to look in the mirror and realize that the psychological and emotional and strategic mistakes the Russians have made are not unique, but fairly common mistakes that we have made in the past and will be prone to make ourselves in the future unless we guard against them by being self-aware, seeing ourselves as others see us, not just as we wish to see ourselves.
Gideon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gideon Rose is a fellow in U.S. foreign policy at the Council on Foreign Relations and is the author of How Wars End, Why We Always Fight the Last Battle. His piece in Foreign Affairs is titled The Irony of Ukraine. We have met the enemy and it is us. Coming up, the real knowns and the known unknowns about the possibility of nuclear war with Russia. This is On the Media.